Tom Davis, that we really delivered that to Bush. And then we asked them to deliver for us secret evidence, you know, the bill against secret evidence. And they tell us that the Bush, because Ashcroft was delayed, his confirmation was delayed, is that it's going to take time to study the issue. But I get a call back in August of 2001, basically telling me from the same person that they've studied the issue and we're going to get to hear good news. And he asked me to invite all the Arab and Muslim leaders to Washington, D.C., at the White House, in which that news would have been announced.
Well, Sami Alarian, we're going to have to leave it there. We seem to have just lost the connection as well. In this exclusive broadcast with Professor Sami Alarian, who has just been deported from the United States after years in jail and then under house arrest, though a Florida jury refused to convict him on any count against him. And I also want to thank Leila Alarian, his daughter, speaking to us from Washington, D.C. That does it for our broadcast. I'll be interviewing Cecile Richards on Wednesday night at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. Check our website at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Berger, Nate Feltzer, Amate, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alfakhani Massoud, Ravi Karen, Dina Gezder, Amy Littlefield. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
The time is now 5 p.m. This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next is a special membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News.
We are corporate America. We will suppress all independent voices. We are corporate America. We will suppress all independent voices.
Is this what you want? Cable needs you now more than ever. Call and pledge.
KBOO would like to thank our community partners that donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Simpatica Dining Hall, located at 828 Southeast Ash, with private dining for celebrations, family gatherings, and corporate meetings. Rental info at simpaticapdx.com. Lunch was provided by Sweet Basil Thai Cuisine, located at 3135 Northeast Broadway, serving home-style Thai food, representing a wide array of dishes cooked by Thai chefs. Dinner was provided by Ling Garden, located at 915 Northwest 21st Avenue, serving Northern Chinese cuisine for lunch, dinner, and delivery. Produce was provided this week by Grocery Getter Organic, specializing in home delivery of organic groceries. Grocery Getter Organic is an independently owned local small business. For more information, their website is ggetter.com.
Let's hear from Amy Goodman, founder and host of Democracy Now!
Do you appreciate the work of KBOO and of Democracy Now!, your daily, grassroots, global, unembedded, independent, international investigative news hour? Please call in and show your support. The number to call is 877-500-5266. It's the lifeline of KBOO, that phone number. Please call. This is the winter membership drive of KBOO, and it means so much to us that KBOO is right there in Portland, Oregon. And right now, though, we're asking you to make the call that makes the difference, to ring for freedom of the media. We urge you to call. We ask you to stand up for independent media, 877-500-5266.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up in our hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, Shia militias have established a new government in Yemen following the recent coup.
An Oregon judge upholds the Portland camping ban as constitutionally legal.
And we'll hear from Portland residents who spoke out at a public hearing last night against the city rejoining the Joint Terrorism Task Force.
KBOO is in our membership drive right now, and I want to urge you to become a member. Call 877-500-5266. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Linda Olson Osterlund. Police accountability activists in the city of Portland say they are cautiously optimistic after a four-hour hearing last night on whether the city should fully rejoin the Joint Terrorism Task Force, or JTTF. The JTTF is an interagency operation which allows the FBI to work with local law enforcement to track suspects, maintain databases, and engage in spy operations. The JTTF has been criticized for profiling Muslims and engaging in entrapment. Currently, Portland officers participate in the JTTF investigations on an as-needed basis. Mayor Hales has expressed dissatisfaction with the vagueness of the yearly reports made by the Portland Police and the FBI. The ACLU of Oregon and other groups oppose collaboration with the JTTF, citing the FBI's history of abusing the rights of law-abiding citizens. Oregon's law prohibits police from spying on First Amendment activities without evidence of criminal activity. As activists and others have pointed out, this puts state law at odds with the method of federal agencies like the FBI. Here's a sampling of some of the public testimony from last night's hearing.
My name is Mayo, and I am addressing you for the first time as the officially designated liaison of the Oregon Pacific Green Party. We want to talk about in the Green Party that the FBI was founded as a political police. In the Palmer days of 1919, it was the FBI that was there to lead the charge. The FBI has an entire century of being a secret political police. We can ask Martin Luther King if we want anybody to tell us how the FBI treats political dissenters in the United States. And after the JTTF is founded and acts within the jurisdiction of this city, what do we get? We get a 19-year-old Somali immigrant whose father brought him to the attention of the federal government. We get that guy railroaded into life imprisonment and his family broken into smithereens. That's what we get from the JTTF in this city.
My name is Jean Yamamoto, and I am a board member of the Portland Japanese American Citizens League, the Portland JACL, which is a chapter of the national organization. We are the oldest, one of the oldest Asian civil rights organizations in the United States, and I am testifying on behalf of the Portland JACL in opposition to Portland joining the JTTF. Our chapter president, Kirk Tambara, was not able to come this evening, but he would like to share his story. His grandfather, Asakichi Tambara, immigrated from Japan to work on the railroads. Leading up to World War II, he owned a restaurant called Nikko and other businesses in Portland's Japantown and was very involved with the Buddhist church. The day after Pearl Harbor was bombed, he was arrested by the FBI. Never having committed a crime, he was taken from his family and community for the entirety of the war and was sent to a detention camp in Santa Fe, New Mexico. A few months later, the rest of the family was sent to the Portland Stockyards and then to Minidoka, where they were incarcerated until the end of the war. After the war ended, the family came back to Portland. They had lost their businesses and had to start all over again, as did many other Japanese Americans. We remember this to honor those who suffered grievously, but also to bear witness to a terrible time when a vulnerable community's constitutional rights were trampled and very few were there to speak up for them. We are at a crossroads today where fear of terrorism is creating hysteria and justifying the sacrifice of some of our civil liberties, especially if it affects the others. 70 years ago, people who looked like me and the Tambara families were the others. Portland is better than this and must be held accountable to all our residents. The Portland police are here to protect and serve and not engage in secret surveillance and other tactics that are against our values.
It's a mistake to assume that the FBI's terrorism task forces are designed to make the community safer when the FBI has created as many or more fake terrorism scenarios than the suspects they are tracking and often entrapping. Their investigations lead to mistrust in the community, so that even if people have been willing to come forward with information about suspicious activity, now they likely are afraid of the consequences. You've already heard this before, but the prime example is Muhammad's father calling the FBI for his help, and his 20-something son ending up being set up and convicted for a fake plot created and funded by the FBI, and he's now facing 30 years in prison. Portland needs to keep being the leader on this issue. When Portland Cop Watch first brought the JTTF to Council's attention in 2000, then Commissioner Hales remarked that Task Force's mission sounded like something out of the Nixon era. The next year, also as you heard before, under Mark Croker, the most militaristic chief we've seen, the Portland Police refused to participate in broad interrogations of our Arab and Muslim communities. In 2005, Mayor Potter, former police chief, took the Portland out of the JTTF because he could not supervise the officers without security clearance. That situation has not changed, despite the proposed contract stating, as Mr. Fidanke read, appropriate supervisory personnel responsible for the police officers must apply for and receive top secret security clearance. There seems to be a trend going on at City Hall. When there's a controversy, don't raise the bridge, lower the river. When we have too few affordable housing units in South Waterfront, the solution is to lower the goal rather than increase the number of units. When the annual reports in the Terrorism Task Force are inadequate, don't demand more information, just get rid of the reports.
Mr. Handelman, I really appreciate you bringing to my attention the wording in the resolution, which is titled Not Enter Into a Memorandum of Understanding. It, however, does say that, be it further resolved, the City of Portland will continue its current practice of not participating in the JTTF investigations, which our current practice is to kind of. So I'm wondering if the three of you, while we hear more testimony, could work on some amended language for this resolution to make it more clear. I mean, it seems to me reasonable that we should have the police chief to have some kind of secret clearance so that when something comes up, otherwise the FBI doesn't get to talk to him ever. I don't know.
Commissioner Fritz, are you suggesting that if something that happened, like happened in Paris or Boston or New York, that the FBI would come to the chief of police here and say, sorry, we're not going to involve you in this investigation because you don't have the appropriate clearance? Do you think that's what's going to happen? Because I think that would be really petty and ridiculous. So I don't think that we should keep the secret security clearance. I think it allows him and encourages him in the resolution as it's written to sit in on the FBI task force meetings every month or quarterly or however often they are. We don't really know. There's no reason for it.
So if the three of you would like to look at that resolution and as I continue to hear testimony, pass me a strikeout amended version of it, I'd be very happy to consider introducing that as a proposed amendment.
That was Commissioner Amanda Fritz speaking with Dan Handelman of Portland Cop Watch during last night's public hearing at the Portland City Hall. The City Council has scheduled a vote for next week on whether to rejoin the Joint Terrorism Task Force.
As you well know, this is community radio. That means you and I. So while you're making that phone call to support community radio at 877-500-5266, the rest of us will check in with Ken and Koch and see how it's going.
Thanks, Liam. Thanks, Linda. And we have Ian at the board there keeping us all together. You're listening to the PM News on KBOO, and we're here in Membership Central. As Liam mentioned, I'm Ken. I'm here with Conch.
Hello.
We're here to take your money. Very happy to do it.
With your permission, of course.
To keep this programming going. Democracy Now!, PM News. Just give us a call if you're a new member or want to become a new member, or you're renewing your membership at 877-500-5266, or you can go online at kboo.com. FM. In the studio, we have several volunteers, Kate, Dale, Richard, and Jean, here to take your calls. You're also welcome to stop by. We're at 20 Southeast 8th, corner of Burnside and Southeast 8th Avenue. Come in. We have a station tour for you. You can see where your money is going. We'd love to see you and meet you and tell you a little bit more about KBOO. Again, that number is 877-500-5266.
Yeah, you know, there's so much to appreciate about, KBOO News is just like the little engine that could. There's a huge investigative series about ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, which people think, well, Oregon's become such a progressive state. Of course, we don't have, you know, right-wing lobbyists writing model laws and them getting through the legislature. Well, actually, if you check out on the KBOO.fm website, find out that's exactly what's happened, the Monsanto Protection Act, among other things. And you really have not seen it outside of KBOO, but that doesn't make it not so. KBOO is getting out there in the communities, not only Portland, but also in Beaverton, Hillsborough, Clackamas County, and Metro. Reports on the Oregon State Legislature, the only reports you'll hear on the air about laws being passed that impact our lives. So this is a great time. This is a great opportunity to support that and to do that by going online at kboo.fm and clicking on the jar at the upper right-hand part of the screen, or just by calling and talking to one of our really happy volunteers out there. The number there is 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO.
And now back to Liam and Linda and the PM News.
This week in Salem, hundreds of workers from around the state gathered for a march and rally to demand a $15 an hour minimum wage. The rally followed a week of supporters swarming town hall meetings across the state to demand higher wages. Five state legislators have sponsored a bill that would make Oregon the first to pass a statewide $15 an hour minimum wage. The city of Seattle last year passed a $15 an hour minimum wage for the city, but a statewide bill has not been passed in any state. The bill would raise the minimum wage to $15 per hour over a three-year phase-in. It has attracted 15 legislative sponsors, as well as the endorsement of almost 70 community organizations, labor unions, and statewide coalitions. Another bill, which would repeal a law that prevents cities from raising the minimum wage themselves, currently has 17 sponsors. Here's a clip from the recent rally in Salem.
Today, 16,000 Oregonians are homeless.
Hoy día, más de 16,000 Oregonianos no tienen hogar.
That's a city the size of Coos Bay, or Troutdale, or the Dalles.
Este es un número tan grande como la ciudad de Coos Bay, Troutdale, o la Dalles.
But you understand that. You know that one in four kids live in poverty.
¿Sabían ustedes que cada uno de cuatro niños viven en pobreza?
When we accept less than a living wage, we all pay.
Cuando aceptamos un sueldo bajo, todos pagamos.
Your tax dollar subsidizes corporations who pay low wages, $1.7 billion last year.
Sus dólares de impuestos cubren los gastos que no cubren las corporaciones.
That was to provide health care and homes and child care and food to low-wage workers.
Impuestos que ayudan a proveer un hogar, aseguranza médica y cuidado de niño.
Corporations increase their profit and you and I pay.
Corporaciones increasen sus ganancias y nosotros perdemos.
But it is the low-wage worker and their families who pay the most.
Y los que pagan más son los trabajadores de bajos salarios y sus familias.
My sisters and brothers, this is wrong.
Mis hermanos y hermanas, esto está mal.
Corporate greed will destroy our state, our nation, our communities, and our families.
La codicia de las corporaciones van a destruir nuestro estado, nuestra nación, nuestras comunidades, nuestras familias.
It's time to hold them accountable.
Es tiempo de hacerlos responsables.
It's time for the Oregon legislature to pass a minimum wage that lifts workers out of poverty, not drive them into it.
Es tiempo que Oregon pase un sueldo mínimo que levanta a los trabajadores de la pobreza.
It's time for Oregon to lead this nation away from an agenda of greed to shared prosperity.
Es tiempo que Oregon lidere esta nación fuera de una agenda de la codicia.
Where, if you work hard, you and your family get ahead.
Donde si trabajas duro, tu familia se va a adelantar.
I want to leave you with this. The Oregonian came out yesterday trying to silence your voice with an article.
Los voy a dejar con esto. Ayer,
trying to silence your voice.
Ayer salió un artículo en el periódico
Oregonian.
I'm not
going to take it. Are you going to take it?
No!
We want 15 now.
Queremos
what do we want?
Ya.
All right, say it so the governor can hear you. What do you want?
¿Qué queremos?
Say it so the speaker can hear you. What do you want?
¿Qué queremos?
Say it so the president of the Senate can hear you. What do you want?
Thank you.
Thank you, my sisters and brothers.
Gracias.
That was Tom Chamberlain, the president of the Oregon AFL-CIO, speaking at a recent rally in Salem with the group 15 Now. The bill for a $15 an hour minimum wage will be presented during the current legislative session in Salem.
Two public charter schools in Portland are fighting to receive funding from the city's art tax. The Ivy School and Southwest Charter are both located in Portland and serve local students whose parents pay the tax, but these schools were cut off from receiving money from the art tax. Voters approved the Arts Education and Access Income Tax in 2012. The tax was designed for Portland Public Schools elementary students. It's meant to help support arts programming. The Ivy School and Southwest Charter both initially received some money from the tax, but have since been told that they won't get any more funding because of a tax distribution formula. For more, KBOO's Joanna Peterson spoke with Leah Maurer, vice president of the Ivy School's Parent Teacher Association.
How did the Ivy School get excluded from this funding?
Well, I have been told that the reason why we are not receiving the tax is because our charter status is through the state. It's through the state of Oregon, and it's not through the city of Portland. So while the charter schools that have their charter status through the city of Portland, like Portland Village School, Trillium, Emerson, they are all receiving this tax money, us, the Ivy School and Southwest Charter School, who are two teeny tiny charter schools that have our charter status through the state, are being excluded from the tax. What happened was we were given the first installment of the tax money last year during the 2013-2014 school year, and then we were never given the second installment, and we're not told until this past summer that we were actually not going to be receiving the tax money at all due to our charter status.
So since you weren't told until the past summer, I mean, did you have any funds that you were able to draw from to fund art classes?
It's really stretched the school's budget. It's made it very difficult for our school board to make decisions because they finished their budget in early spring, like February, March, or something like that. So when they had made the budget for the 2014-2015 school year, the year that we're in right now, they had budgeted for receiving that money. They rehired our music teacher. They budgeted for various art and music supplies. And then we're not told until several months later that indeed we were not going to be receiving that money at all. So it has certainly stretched their budget. I feel very fortunate that we have excellent teachers who have still been able to continue to give our children art education on a weekly basis. Our music teacher has very, very graciously stayed on to continue teaching, but he's getting paid pretty much pennies for doing the great job that he's doing. And he's a parent at our school, so essentially it's almost like he's volunteering his time because he is a music professional. And that's been really hard. And I imagine if we weren't in a situation where our music teacher did happen to be a parent at our school, that we would probably not have a music teacher at all right now.
So are you doing anything to try to get that funding back?
We are. We're trying really hard to get the funding back. In fact, we've been working on it since about the beginning of December in terms of just making parents aware of what's going on. And just a week ago Tuesday, so that would have been, around the end of January, about a week and a half ago, we did send a very forthright and well-thought-out specific letter to Mayor Hales and to all of the city commissioners via email. In addition to the letter, we sent over 180 signatures of support of our school getting this arts tax money because we are an elementary school, we are within the city of Portland, and we are a public school, and those type of students is who this art tax was designed for. And I don't believe that we are meant to be left out when the tax passed. And I certainly don't believe that when people voted yes on this tax, that they intended to exclude two small public schools within our city.
So you said you don't think it was intentional that you were left out of the funding.
I think it is a matter of how the city is choosing to interpret it. I think that they are choosing to interpret it in a way that excludes Ivy School and excludes Southwest Charter School.
So what are some of the responses you've gotten from Mayor Hales and, you know, those who you've been appealing to?
Sadly, we've gotten no response at all. I have gotten nothing from the mayor's office. I've gotten nothing from any of the city commissioners. So it does feel very frustrating as a parent and as a citizen, really, to feel that such a basic issue of what I believe to be fundamental fairness is being completely ignored. So it's frustrating for me, it's frustrating for our teachers, and it's certainly frustrating for all the other parents and for the kids. I mean, ultimately, who it's affecting the most is the students at our school.
I've been speaking with Leah Maurer, who is the vice president of the PTA for the Ivy School. We've been talking about how the Ivy School and one other charter school in Portland have not been receiving funding from Portland's art tax. For KBOO News, I'm Joanna Peterson.
A Multnomah County judge ruled that Portland's camping ban is in fact legal. Public defenders brought the case to the judge for Alexandra Barrett, who is houseless. Her public defenders filed a motion late last year requesting the judge to dismiss Barrett's numerous camping-related charges. They argued the camping ban violated portions of the Oregon and U.S. constitutions. The judge disagreed and ruled the camping ban was constitutional. With the camping ban ruled legal, criminal cases against Barrett will move forward with a trial set for early March. Houseless people are greatly affected by the camping ban, as shelters are overcrowded and a safe place to sleep is hard to come by. KBOO reporter Chesley Hedison spoke with Ibrahim Mubarak, founder of Right to Dream 2, an outdoor houseless shelter in Portland's downtown.
The Multnomah County Judge Stephen Bouchong wrote that the ordinance does not impermissibly punish someone for their homeless status. The ordinance punishes conduct, camping on public property, not the status of being homeless. What is your response to that?
The conduct is sleeping on public or private property. Is that what he's going to charge them with, criminalize them for sleeping on public or private property?
Yeah.
And if that's the case, then he is criminalizing them for their social status, because a houseless person don't have nowhere to go. So he's speaking in an oxymoronic term where, you know, he's not being clear on what he's talking about. Maybe he don't know what he's talking about.
I would agree that he doesn't really understand what he's saying, because he also says that even though the camping ban is legal, arresting people who are struggling to survive in the streets just because they have no place else to go is not the answer, he says. He says we must do better than that.
Exactly. Like I said before, the Native American said it best. He's speaking with a forked tongue, saying one thing and meaning another.
How does the camping ban affect the people you interact with at Right to Dream?
It would affect them immensely, because we have limited space throughout the day, like for 80 people in an eight-hour period of time. And so where we do like 100, because we have other people that stay there permanently that operate the rest area. And with that saying that, with the overcrowded shelters, Right to Dream 2 is overcrowded. So where are these people going to go? They're going to say, oh, I'm homeless and I'm struggling to survive, but I can't fall asleep. Because if I fall asleep, I'm going to be criminalized. So you what you're doing, you're creating people that's going to have mental problems because they can't sleep, and their mentality is not going to be there, you know, to think properly or to figure things out. So I don't understand. Again, I don't understand, how could you not criminalize a person if for their social status, if you're going to do it from where they lay their head and rest, and that's exercising their human rights.
This is Chelsea Hedelson for KBOO News.
KBOO helps to keep Portland, Portland. And we all can get behind that. So now it's time for you to get behind it by calling 877-500-5266. And now we'll talk to Conch and Ken and see what's happening.
Hi, thank you, Liam. This is Conch. I'm out here with Ken. We're going to take a quick break to allow people to get to the phones and call toll-free 877-500-5266. It's 877-500-5266. KBOO. You know, I mean, if you're like me, you're totally wrapped at these stories of complex issues that are going on right now in the community. The charter schools battling for RTX funding, the courts and the cases that are going before them about the camping ban. And we're going to have a really fantastic exclusive interview that Jenka is going to bring you just a little later in the half hour. So stay tuned. So we want to just take the couple minutes out right now, and Ken will tell you about like all the things that are available to folks who become members of KBOO, go from being a passive listener to an active member.
Yeah, we had from the last hour, and I know a lot of you are still big Amy Goodman Democracy Now! Fans. We have a Democracy Now! T-shirt, and Conch, that was for a minimum pledge of $75,
so six and a quarter every month.
And now we have, and this is incredible, item. It's a KBOO hoodie, an official KBOO hoodie. It's black with a KBOO Community Radio logo on it, and it's absolutely beautiful. There was a volunteer
kind of militant looking, but at the same time, yeah, as they said, soft and warm.
Soft and warm, he kept saying yes, and I said I'd need to have one of those. Anyway, that is for a pledge of $20 a month through EFT, so that's electronic fund transfer, and we'll take that either through a credit card now or a debit card, your choice. So it's actually fairly painless. $20 a month, you get the hoodie, and you're doing a good thing for KBOO. You're supporting the programming that you love, Amy Goodman and our PM News. To do that, give us a call. We have Kate, Dale, Richard, and Jean standing by to take your calls at 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm.
Yes, the number again, toll-free, 877-500-KBOO. And that works out to 877-500-5266. We have volunteers back here who are happy to tell you about all the ways that you can become a member. You could just have a bill sent to your home if you don't have the money right now. A pledge is a promise. You could just use a credit card or a debit card, and you can do that with a full amount or with a monthly amount that sustains the foundation here at the station and helps to make sure that we pay our bills every month. You know, and there are certainly other ways too. You could come into 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. Just stroll in the door, bring a nickel jar with you and lay it down, and we'll find an appropriate thank you gift if you like. We'll give you a cup of coffee, show you a tour of the station. 20 Southeast 8th Avenue.